let's move to topic four, which is software engineering related to software product quality requirements and evaluation, also known as SQUARE. It is an ISO 25010 standards released in 2011. So it starts with what is quality? Now let's take an example of a mobile phone. For a teenage who's using the mobile phone, maybe the pixels of camera, the usage of camera is what to him is quality of the product. For someone who's using social media very often, it is how he's able to use Facebook, Twitter, that defines the quality of the phone. And someone who's using the phone for a business purpose, it's how well it handles Word, Excel, PowerPoint, PDF documents, readability, that becomes the quality. So in effect, what is a quality? If I was a manufacturer of a mobile phone, do I need to ensure that my camera works the best? Do I need to ensure that the Facebook integration is good? Or do I need to ensure that the business applications work well? Well, quality is encompassing and it covers all. My mobile phone not only has to look at the camera, it has to look at the Facebook integration, the social network integration, it has to look at business application usage and things like that. So quality is nothing but the value. Now this value can differ from individual to individual. As the product owner, as the product business who makes these products, I am not going to be able to distinguish the better quality for someone and a worse quality for someone. The product quality will be same, and therefore this standard tries to build upon the quality, what is quality and things like that. So here the definition, as you would see, the quality of a system is the result of quality of the system elements and their interaction. So it says quality of a system is nothing but the quality of all the small elements that make up that system and how they talk to each other. Another way to look at it, because it's related to software engineering, the software quality is a degree to which the software product satisfies stated and implied needs when used under specified condition. So it does not only meet the stated needs like ability of a mobile phone to make calls, send SMSs and things like that, but implied needs like maybe using the business application, storing some information, capturing some images on the through the camera, or using WhatsApp, things like that, under specified condition. Now if your phone is not going to work underwater and you go down and want to still click some photographs underwater, then it will not work, it will get spoiled. So that, does it mean then the quality of the product is bad? No, because the specified condition clearly said above water, it will not work below the water or under the water. And when you use it in that non-specified condition, then it will not meet the criteria and therefore it will still be a quality product. So quality can also be referred to how maintainable software is. For a software company, if my product is highly maintainable, that means I need to put less resource to ensure that it works the way it's supposed to work. It's very profitable for me. For a site, an e-com site, speed is very critical. So for him, the quality is speed, usability, testability, and things like that. So quality, it means different things to different people. But in software engineering, it means all the things under the specified conditions should work and be managed. So what is the prime importance? Prime importance of this standard is to develop a high quality or select a high quality software product. Now what is a high quality software product? Which covers software engineering, avoids software crisis, it is on time completion of software projects if I am doing a project or developing it. And what is a software? Basically a software is nothing but abstract and human creation, and because it is abstract and it is made by humans, because again coming back, made by humans and abstract, actually it should be reverse way, the predictability of quality is never 100%. For example, it's abstract. So if I were to tell someone who's laying down a bridge from one end of the river to the other end, from one bank to the other, and suddenly in the middle I say, no, make it 60 degrees towards west and then bring it back to 40 degrees towards east and then maybe go back little and go front, then the bridge will never be completed. Unfortunately, in software, because it is abstract, people suddenly change because it is not looking good, they may be thinking of a different requirement. So just imagine coming back to the bridge example. So the bridge is made to take care of four-wheel vehicles or car of a certain weight. And suddenly a huge tanker, they decide that, oh no, we must also have huge tankers cross it. Now the bridge will collapse against it because it is not made for it. And in software, unfortunately, that will never be the case. You build a nice required software and then suddenly you feel, no, I must have something else in it. And therefore, you keep changing. And therefore, again, because at different levels, different human beings will be working on it, the specification has changed. Therefore, the predictability of quality is never going to be 100%. It will be, if you use a framework and good quality methodology, it will be very close to 100%, but never 100%. That is something that we have to keep in mind. And possibility of producing identical software by two engineers given same requirement is very low. Coming back to the same point. Now, Watt S. Humphrey, who's an American software engineer, was a key thinker in the discipline of software engineering and is often called the father of software quality. It was he who actually thought of that software engineering as a principle and therefore even quality as part of it. So in 1980, at Software Engineering Institute, he founded a software process program aimed at understanding and managing the software engineering processes. And this extension of his program was called the Capability Maturity Model, which we discussed before. The emphasis on some following standard discipline in the development of software. So he laid down some emphasis on standard discipline. So first he listed down what are the standard discipline, and then he said this is required for the development of software applications. Now coming to another point, comprehensive specification and evaluation of software product quality, according to him, is a key factor in ensuring adequate quality. So specification and evaluation of software quality is a key factor in ensuring adequate quality. The standard ISO IEC 9126 defines the software product evaluation is a quality characteristics and guidelines for their use. They develop tests to support the quality needs and define six quality characteristics that are required at the time of software product evaluation. They also describe software product evaluation process model, and then the standard was evolved and released of a revised version ISO 25010 or SQUARE as we see it now. So under this model, you had the quality requirements division, the quality modeling division, how to manage the quality, how to measure it, and how to evaluate it, and then the entire extension division of it. So as represented diagrammatically there, it family of divisions which looked into all these things. So as per SQUARE standards, a software quality can be defined, managed and measured in terms of two broad categories, quality in use and product quality. What is quality in use? Quality in use relates to the outcome of human interaction with software. So how do human interact with the software and what is the outcome of it is measured as quality in use. Product quality relates to the static and the dynamic properties of the software. The characteristics of these models are applicable to every kind of software. That's the huge plus. It provides consistent terminology for software product quality. It provides comparison set for quality requirements. And quality models can be used to support specification and evaluation of software from different perspectives, be it developers, third-party vendors, quality assurance staff, and independent evaluators, etc. Activities during product lifecycle that can be benefit from the use of quality models include identifying the software requirement, validating the comprehensiveness of the requirement definition. Now, this is normally missing in an SDLC cycle where the requirements are given, but no one checks for their comprehensiveness. By using a product development model or a quality model, SQUARE, it has a framework which also validates the comprehensiveness of the requirement definition. Then you can identify the design objective. What is the design objectives of the software? The testing objective, what are you going to test, how are you going to test, the depth of the test, the width of the test, and so on and so forth. Quality assurance criteria, what kind of criteria will you apply to give a quality assurance to it? and user acceptance criteria for completed software product. While quality in use is a measure of quality of the system in a real or simulated operational environment, it is determined by the software hardware that you're using, the operating environment, the OS, the app and stuff like that, and the characteristic of the user, task and social environment. Quality in use can be used to assess the quality of a software in a specified context of use, so we call it a use case scenarios, we can build that. And the attributes of quality in use are categorized into usability in use, flexibility in use and safety. So a diagrammatical representation of it, usability in use means effectiveness in use, efficiency in use, satisfaction while using it, and the use compliance. Flexibility means context conformity, extendability and flexibility. Safety is when you're using, how safe it is, not safe it is, things like that. The software product quality model categorizes software quality attributes into 8 characteristics and various sub characteristics. For example, in functional suitability, it looks as appropriateness, accuracy and compliance. In reliability, it looks into sub characteristics like fault tolerance, recoverability and compliance. Compliance is everywhere. Performance efficiencies, time, resource utilization. In operability, it looks as learning, ease of use, helpfulness. Apple has come up with a huge user interface design document, only meant that should you build an application or app in the Apple environment which interacts with the user, and there is guidelines for it. And I request you then to go through the Apple website to look into those guidelines if you are more interested in understanding the user interface which it has provided to the developers. It also covers security, what kind of confidentiality you have to keep, how you have to keep, integrity, non-repudiation, accountability, authenticity of the data and things like that. Compatibility, whether it will work with something, not work with something. Interoperability, very important in compatibility characteristics. Maintainability, especially for applications or products which needs to be maintained over a period of time. Whether I can reuse something to develop, or what is the cost of change, impact of change and things like that. Transferability, practice for end programmers to follow. Now obviously, as an end programmer, he gets some guidelines to follow. The first thing is developer traceability matrix. So right from requirement till delivery of each functional delivery or each technical delivery, there has to be a traceability matrix of what was asked, how it was planned, who changed it if there are any change, how it was developed, who has tested it, who has released it and who's using it. Assistance of software quality assurance team, the end developer can take. He can use standard coding practices. Now obviously if you are using any standards like CMMI and any coding standards, you must use the standard coding practice. The development has to be modular, there should be reusable code and cohesiveness in the design phase. So the design has to be done in such a way that the requirements are modularized, there are a lot of reusability components if possible made, and it has to be cohesive, meaning work well within the environment. Ease to understand notification and error message. One of the common mistakes which developers make is they make very cryptic error messages. While for a normal user, an error message is the guideline on what to do next. It acts like a guide. Therefore, you may even want to build a standard for the error messages. Exception handling. So what happens in case there is exception, planned and unplanned, how do you handle it? Very important. And of course, right time, give notification and alerts. So with that, we finish the square, the quality aspect of the software development. And we go into the topic 5, which is intellectual property rights, or IPR as it is known. Now IPR differs from country to country, from understanding to understanding as well. And in today's time, we know that IPR is the key for success. Why it is key? Because today we are moving to a knowledge-based working environment. And because it's a knowledge-based, if you don't have a knowledge, then to build that knowledge, it takes time. Therefore, any country which is able to shorten the learning time or utilize its knowledge will be able to do much better, as a result of which the success ratio goes up. Therefore, intellectual property rights are important, but the innovation risks have gone up today. Technology changes are high, production cycle is short, competition is no longer local but global in nature, R&D involves high cost, and there is a high demand for skilled human resource. So what is intellectual property? Intellectual property is a legal concept which refers to the creation of mind for which exclusive rights are recognized. So one, it refers to creation or conceptions that cannot be measured in terms of money. You can build an IP for it. Under intellectual property law, owners are granted certain exclusive rights to a variety of intangible assets such as musical, literary, artistic work, discoveries and inventions, words, phrases, symbols and designs which are not commonly used but created and cannot be measured by money. IP rights are given to them. Common type of IP rights include patents. Now, what is a patent? A patent is granted to an inventor for exclusive rights to make, use, sell and import an invention for a limited period of time in exchange for the public disclosure of the invention. So the inventor has to disclose it publicly that I have invented this, and he gets exclusive rights to making that product or process, use it, sell it or import it for his limited period of time. Copyright. Copyright gives the creator of an original work, the key is the original work, exclusive right to it, usually for a limited time. As I said, it differs from country to country. So some country the time may change, some could be forever, but hardly it works, and everyone is now changing it to meet some common standards. Industrial design right. An industrial design right protects the visual design of the objects that are purely utilitarian. Trademark. Trademark is recognizable sign, design or expression which distinguish products or services of a particular trader from a similar product or services of other traders. Like for example, Samsung is a trademark, Apple is a trademark, and it's illegal to copy them. Trade dress. Trade dress is a legal term of art that generally refers to a characteristics of the visual appearance of the product or its packaging that signifies the source of the product to consumers. So if you come up with a fantastic design of the product or maybe packaging, you can do a trade dress of it. Trade secret, so formulas which you don't want to share with people, keeping it closed, and you can treat it like a trade secret, and everyone has a distinct purpose. So patents are used to protect enhancement to existing inventions or completely new inventions. Copyrights are used to protect creative works of literature, music and other related fields, normally very creative fields. Trademarks are generally phrases, words or design used by brands to market their products and become an important part of identity of the product, like Nike, Just Do It and things like that. The innovative and creative rights is protected under the intellectual property system of the World Trade Organization or WTO, and WTO provides a framework for formalizing these trade agreements and disputes and how it can be handled. India is a founder member of WTO, and Indian government has ratified the agreement on trade related intellectual property rights, or TRIPS as it is called. So India has set up an IPR regime which is compatible to World Trade Organization under TRIPS, and it is well established at all levels, whether statutory, administrative or judicial. It comprises of, now to implement TRIPS, it comprises of 62 documents, 14 plus acts, 19 plus laws, 28 plus regulations, 11 plus global treaties, 36 plus multilateral treaties and 4 literatures. India is also a member of World Intellectual Property Organizations or WIPO, based in Geneva. Department of Industrial Policy and Promotion is a nodal department in the government of India for all matters concerning WIPO, which is World Intellectual Property Organization. Now obviously the benefits of promoting and protecting IPs are, it encourages people who are creative by nature to create new works in all areas including culture and technology. and because if people are encouraged to create new things, there will be newer market. So it spurs economic growth and creates jobs and new industries possibly as well. Now, because the laws make it difficult for someone to copy or use your intellectual property, it provides them protection, and because of their protection, they are able to visualize it much more and use it much more and improve the general economic situation, and they can also put more, and the investors can put more money with them for further innovation. Now, if more and more people create new things or new way of working, new style of working, new trademarks and things like that, then overall at a country level, it helps the countries to leverage the intellectual property potential for economic development. So there is a very high correlation between the intellectual property and the economic growth as well. It strikes a balance between the interest of innovators and the beneficiaries, providing an environment in which creativity and invention can flourish. So IP rights, as you say, it rewards them, it incentivizes the researchers, and consumers are assured of non-pirated goods and can confidently buy genuine products or services. Now, there are some drawbacks to it, and in technology, as we all know, one of the things that has emerged as a hot discussion point, and in third world countries also a usage point, and not only third world, even in developed worlds a usage point, is the open source program, where a lot of developers at their own time create something which can be used by anyone internationally without wanting to pay anything for it. So same example, if you take it to pharmacy and healthcare, you suddenly realize that the cost of pharmacy or healthcare can be brought down if the IP usage is monitored and used you know, selectively, because normally a lot of money has gone into R&D. This is done primarily by the developed countries, where the need of this product and healthcare is also required in third world countries who cannot afford that kind of treatment. So there is a huge imbalance which results in social conflict and things like that. So that's one of the drawback of having an IPR as well. So also some critics say that these laws put restriction on people to naturally creative process. Don't know how far it is true, but this is one of the drawback that critics say. Also, to enforce copyright laws is to prevent people from making peaceful use of information they process. So if you have bought a book, you've got some information from it, there are many people who say now it's your information, you should be able to use it as it wants because you have freedom of information, freedom of speech and things like that. So that is one of the critics of IPR. The critics also say that information is not a concrete thinking an individual can control. It is universal and can exist in people's mind. They may not have expressed it or taken a patent or a copyright for it, but they may already have it. So that's that is why it infringes on other rights of freedom and expression. So that in short is intellectual property rights or IPR. Now we come to topic 6, which is for critical infrastructure protection, or CIP, or CIP as it is called. Now, what are the critical incidents? And we look at not organization level now, we look at a country level, a state level, at bigger things. So critical incidents that triggered this was 9th September 2001 or 9/11 in US, where the planes hijacked by the terrorist hit the World Trade Center, and we saw the impact of it, what happened to the world after that. 26th November 2008, 261/11 in Mumbai, where the terrorist came through the boats and attacked and killed people in a city of Mumbai. There are many movies that we see for critical incidents. One of the movie is Italian Job, released in 2003, and the last one to release that we can relate to critical infrastructure protection is Die Hard 4, in which there was a fire sale, they said, where all the assets of the country financial assets and otherwise were being sold off or destroyed. That was released in 2007. In all of this, the vulnerability and the weakness of the systems designed and implemented with best knowledge and expertise were exploited, and therefore it needed more work on it. It also said that failure of any infrastructure can lead to failure in other sectors and cause a cascading effect because of the synergistic effect of infrastructure industries on each other. So failed electricity distribution system, so if the electricity grid goes off, all the infrastructure, security system and otherwise which are dependent on power to work, maybe your access door, suddenly they are open and there is no control left. Therefore, infrastructure is very much related to security. Critical infrastructure can be owned or operated by both public and private sector, but the public sector has a fundamental role to making it as secure as possible. System designed and implemented with the best of technology and expertise are vulnerable. So the SIP understands it, acknowledges it. It says digital world is constantly living on the edge of a cliff with an ever increasing cyber attacks, which we have discussed. Cyber attacks have gone up over a period of time. It's easier to attack a small link in the chain of interconnected services and cause maximum damage. Critical infrastructure are assets that are essential for functioning of the society and economy, and most common of them are electricity generation, transmission, distribution, oil and gas production, transport and distribution of oil and gas, telecommunication, computer systems, water supply, agriculture and heating, public health, transportation system, financial services, security services. The dependence on such large set of infrastructure inside the organization or across global frontiers is very high. So, in Information Technology Act of 2000, critical infrastructure was defined, and this is the definition of critical infrastructure. And it said, we depend on infrastructure in various sectors for multiple activities like trading, payments, medical systems, etc. And with the advances in technology, systems within each sector have become automated and interlinked through computers and communication facilities. Dedicated programs have been carried out by the US as well as European Commission on critical infrastructure protection. The government of India, of course, came up and designated NCIIPC of NTRO as the nodal agency, saying that's the nodal agency for critical infrastructure protection. And under the Section 70A of the amended act, which they will look into research and development for protection of critical infrastructure protection in India. And some of the stakeholders identified by them are NSC, Reserve Bank of India, SEBI, NTPC, National Power Corporation of India, BARC, TRAI, Bharat Sanchar, Power Grid, BHEL, ONGC, NABARD, IDBI. So the mission of NCIIPC is to ensure that they take all necessary measures to protect of this information infrastructure, critical information infrastructure, from unauthorized access, modification, misuse, disclosure, disruption, and they will do it by coordination, synergy, and rising information awareness among the stakeholders to ensure that we get safe, secure, and resilient information infrastructure for critical sectors in India. This is the mission of NCIIPC, and the vision is to facilitate safe, secure, and resilient information infrastructure for critical sectors in India. CIP is a concept, so it relates to preparedness and response to serious incident that involves critical infrastructure of a region or a nation. And a private industry in each of these sector needs to access their own vulnerabilities in both physical and cyber attacks. They should try to eliminate the significant vulnerabilities. They should have systems in place to identify and prevent attempted attacks, alert, contain and rebuff attacks, and rebuild assessment capabilities in the aftermath. So BCP, disaster recovery are also part of this protection. So a CIP process includes assessment of protection, what kind of protection you have, where are the areas where you need protection, vulnerability, which is the level of susceptibility of attacks, risk, what is the probability of you getting attacked, and what are the risk mitigation factors so that you are able to overcome the risk and bring it business as usual as fast as possible. The critical controls required to ensure SIP are wide range and include identification of critical information infrastructure, defining the interdependencies. You must have access control policies for both physical and through networks. You should look at data storage, hashing and encryption, intranet, cloud security, outsourcing and vendor security, critical information, how do you dispose it and transfer it and safeguard it. Perimeter protection, maintenance of all CIA related equipment, risk assessment, asset and inventory management. You should do periodic penetration testing, both physical and network, to ensure that whatever rules you have set in place, the process that you have set in place are getting used and people are following it. Feedback and action plan mechanism. And most importantly, have an incident management methodology through which if any incident takes place, whether while testing or in real, those are investigated and corrective and preventive actions are taken on it. Training and skill upgrades are happening, contingency planning, and in addition to incident management, have a periodic audit. CIP needs a unified national capability to protect the interrelated aspects of the countries or the organization's infrastructure. So that takes care of critical infrastructure protection or CIP. So the nodal agency in India, NCIIPC, takes care of all the critical incident infrastructure and has identified all those things, and then training, skill upgrades and everything is happening for them. So from there we move to topic 7, which is SPICE, Software Process Improvement and Capability Determination, ISO IEC 15504. So what is the process? We've already looked at it. So logical organization of people, material, energy, equipment, procedure into work activities designated to produce a specified end result can be looked at process, and process measures are put in place and its uses. They can compare performance between two teams, two partners against the standard, and gives us a value-based purchasing programs and look at various incentives and stakeholder reporting. Process measures also help us to look at the process in depth with each step, and we can remove waste in the process and also optimize the process. Software engineering has a lot of improvement assessed with drawbacks, such as because software engineering is relatively new field, it has a lot of drawbacks that there is no established theories, methods and techniques or models. It's very people oriented discipline. And software measurement applications, repeatability of results is not achieved. As a consequence, one cannot expect the software engineering measurement models and theories to be of necessarily same nature, precision and accuracy. One of the things the models like is repeatability of results. In software, as we found, because it's huge person dependent, the repeatability of results is very difficult, as a result of which using any model with statistics around it then becomes very difficult to measure the software process applications. The software measure tool may not be valid on general basis and very low. But as the adage goes, you can improve what you can measure. So if you don't measure your process, software development process, then you will never be able to improve it. That is a basic assumption. You will not be able to put the right tools, procedures and plan accordingly. So it says the software organization should have measurement process, and that they can use to identify their own capability and how they will use it to achieve delivering products and services. And also they say when you start measuring, you will be able to anticipate problems and therefore have a better grip on cost and time overruns, if any, and quality as well. So ISO 15504 on information technology process assessment, so it's for process assessment, is known as SPICE, which is Software Process Improvement and Capability Determination. It was previously known as capability management. Now it is treated as determination. So it is a set of technical standard documents for computer software development process and related business management functions. So for software development process, ISO IEC 15504 or SPICE is a technical standard document to be followed. Reference model is for maturity models against which assessors can place collected evidence during the assessment. The standard covers six areas, which is organization level, management level, engineering of software process, acquisition and supply, support and operations. ISO 15504 can be broken into two contexts, either on process improvement or capability determination. And at capability levels, there are six capability level, level five, but six tests, because they also have level four, like capability level management of SEI, CMMI. So you have an incomplete process, performed process, managed process, established, predictable, and optimized. Each process attributes consists of one or more generic practice, which are further elaborated into practice indicators to add assessment performance. So for example, in this particular model, the SPICE model, its process attribute is rated on 4-point rating scale. So point one is not achieved. So if you not achieved the attribute, the process attribute, you are at one, which is not achieved, partially achieved, largely achieved, and fully achieved. So the rating is based on evidence collected against the practice indicators which demonstrate fulfillment of process attributes. And one method of measuring process and their attribute is to define goals, associate project issues, process issues, and attributes that can be measured for the product and the process. So you define it and you start measuring against it. Some typical business goal and examples of attributes are given by the model itself. So for example, a business goal is to increase the functional benefit. The projects that you will take is whichever product growth or product stability, the process issue that can come with product confirmations, and how will you measure it, how much requirement it we are getting, what is the size of the product, what is the complexity, rate of change, and percentage non-confirming. If you are looking at reducing cost, then the project issues are with budget expenditure rates, and you will look at efficiency, productivity, and the rework cost. If you are looking at reducing the time to market, then you will start monitoring your schedule. If you are wanting to improve the product quality, then you will look at the product, the performance of the product, the correctness, the reliability, and put the appropriate process issues around it, which is root cause analysis and stuff like that. You will measure it by saying how much defects I have introduced or I have or not introduced, or how much defects came in the product and what were eliminated, and what is the effectiveness of defect detection activity in case any. Outcome, which is the product measure. So what is the outcome measurement you want to collect to determine the type of process measurements collected and driven by outcome need for an organization. An outcome measure is used to measure the success of the system. Process measure and process improvement. So once you measure what is the process metrics that you have, you measure the process to determine the outcome, and you try constantly improving upon it. Capability determination. So ISO 15504 provides a framework for assessing proposed suppliers as assessed either by organization itself or by independent assessor. And it has four responsibilities that are central to process management on similar lines of Deming's PDCA cycle, which is define the process, measure the process, control the process, and improve the process or take actions on the process. With this, we come to an end of chapter 5. As always, our last point is the self-assessment topics, and the self-assessment topics are put here. So what is a risk? How does an ISO standard help to deal with risk? Explain the Basel Accords. What is tier 1, tier 2 capital? What does CAR imply? How does the Basel Accords change from 1 to 3? Why it got changed? What is the common criteria? How does it help vendors, users, and laboratories? scope of ISO standard 25010, example of activities that can help during product development to ensure the quality of the product, what is SPICE, what are capability levels, what is an IPR law, what is common infrastructure protection, what is the controls required to have an effective CIP, and so on. So thank you for listening to the entire chapter. As always, all the best for your reading. Thank you.